You're listening to a podcast of the South China Morning Post. In American literature, there are few writers as accomplished as the mainland-born Ha Zhen. He's one of only three people to have twice won the Penn Faulkner Award for fiction. The other two are Philip Roth and John Wideman. But what makes this accomplishment even more noteworthy is that Ha Zhen is writing in his second language. He began learning English at the age of 21 by listening to half-hour lessons on the radio in China. Altogether, Ha Zhen has written three volumes of poetry, three collections of short stories, and five novels. One of his most celebrated works is Waiting, a tragic love story set during the Cultural Revolution. In this interview with Manpreet Sameshwar, Ha Zhen describes his work, his life journey, and why writing in English is a kind of suffering.
You worked as a soldier, I believe, in the People's Liberation Army.
Yeah.
And today you are a celebrated American writer. How would you describe the journey?
The journey, in a way, I think I've been driven by a kind of force beyond myself. I would say like that, by circumstances. Of course, I'm very fortunate in many ways and made the right decisions at different moments in my life and sometimes seized the opportunities to move ahead. So on the whole, I think I feel very lucky in that sense. You see, in the army, I mentioned this morning, I had so many fellow soldiers, comrades, who were very smart, extremely intelligent, but they never had the opportunity to develop themselves, to be educated. So as a result, I always feel that they had wasted their lives. But I really, now I'm different from them in the sense that I moved away step by step from them. Not physically or spiritually, just as a person, I gradually live a different kind of life.
Was there any moment in this trajectory, you know, when you started as a soldier and I read that you actually taught yourself English because it was during the end of Cultural Revolution and there weren't any books available, so you were teaching yourself English. Did you at any point think that you would become a writer?
No, I think there's a lot of a myth behind this. And I did teach my English, but that was after the army. In the year of 1976, when I was a worker, and in that year, the city Jiangsu in Heilongjiang in the province started a radio program. So they broadcast lessons, half hour a day in the morning. So I followed that. So that's how I started. I guess not just myself, thousands of people must have been doing the same thing. And then in the year of 1997, you know, the entrance exams were reinstalled. So I took the exams and became an English major. So it was not like I just taught myself the language. I just knew a few words at the time when I became an undergrad.
All right. But you did mention that you felt there were a lot of your comrades who were very intelligent but probably didn't pursue. So did any of them show interest as well in learning the language?
No.
So what drove you? What was your motivation for the same?
At the time, it was very vague. It was very vague. I thought I didn't see any practical use of this language. I only knew that Friedrich Engels, Karl Marx's friend, Engels had written a book called The Working Condition, the Living Conditions of Working Class in London, something like that, a long book written in English. So that's the only English book I knew that was there. So I thought eventually someday I might be able to read that book in the original. Okay. That was the only idea I could imagine, could envision for myself at the time.
Had you read that book in Chinese? And
no, I never read it.
Okay.
Never read it. At the time, I thought the book was written in English. I knew that. And if I learn enough English, someday I might be able to read this book in the language, in the original language. But later, even I bought the book in the United States, I have never read it.
Not till date?
No, because I'm kind of superstitious about this. I should never read it.
Okay. So in a sense, Engels has led to you to where you are.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You would rather not disturb the equilibrium.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I was doing this research and reading about you, and there's so many fascinating sort of episodes, and as you mentioned earlier, it's almost as if there was somebody guiding you, the fate or whatever, the hand of destiny, because I read that you had just finished your poetry manuscript for submission called Between Silences.
Yes, yes.
And around that time is when the Tiananmen Square massacre happened.
Yeah.
And you probably figured that going back to China would not be the best thing to do.
Sure, yeah.
So what were your emotions at the time? What was your thinking which kept you back in the U.S.?
I was in shock. I had served in the Chinese army, and we were taught to serve the people. The army was from the people, was supposed to protect, to serve the people. But as a now everything was reversed. I couldn't reconcile the fact with my own all the years of instructions, and I was in a daze for weeks. Just didn't know. Couldn't function normally. But later, my son arrived. I realized I should immigrate to live in the United States, let him become an American. I was not sure of my own life at the time, but I was certain that he must be American.
Okay. Yeah. So you could say that pivotal point, your decision was taken because of your own son, and his future that you saw in the United States being brighter.
Not only his future, I saw that the violence and the massacre served no purpose. It's gratuitous. And then I realized there has been so much violence and destruction in Chinese history, done gratuitously, no purpose at all, as if there was a cycle, and a lot of Chinese had been trapped in the cycle. I wanted my son to get out of that. That was another motivation, so that he would be better for him to stay in the United States and live that in that place and take this new land as his country. That was my immediate purpose.
Okay. And what was one of the... So after that is when you started working, I believe.
Before that I worked too. Then after that the question was what to do about my own life. I don't know. I didn't know. I didn't know. Couldn't figure it out. It took a year for me to decide to write in English.
Mm. Okay. And did you start teaching at that time?
Or? No. I went to BU, Boston University, to do creative writing. So that's how I began to write fiction. Yeah.
Did you think at that point that writing fiction did you see it as a way of making good money to sustain a livelihood with your family there?
No.
What prompted you once again, towards writing?
I had friends, American friends, who were teaching creative writing, and usually they had two books under their belt. So I thought maybe if I continue to write, and after maybe four books, I might be able to get a job like theirs. That was the immediate purpose. And I didn't think the book, I had published a book of poems at the time. So I thought I have one, maybe another two or three, I might get a job.
All right.
I didn't think of making money by the books, but I thought indirectly to make money, make a living basically.
So as a published writer, or author of two or three books, it would be easy to get a kind of permanent teaching job. So that,
another
indirect way of leading to where you are currently.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the setting of your books, it's very interesting. Your first collection of short stories, the fictional Muji city, which is somewhere on the Russian-Chinese border. And then as you move, the setting, you know, the fictional setting has, the setting of your fiction seems to have moved from that border to North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, in War Trash was North Korea. And finally in your last book, which I'm afraid I haven't read, but what I've read about it is that it's set very much in the United States.
Yes.
So do you think that over these, what, 20, 22 years of writing or time since you left China, you actually mentally and emotionally transitioned away from China to being an American, feeling like an American?
Yes or no. In a way, for me, a writer in my situation, every book is a kind of departure. We are still in the process. I am still in the process of becoming a writer, certain kind of writer. I don't know exactly what kind. So every book is a movement of departure from the previous one. So that, I think, produced the impression that the locality changed. That's natural, in fact, in a way, because every book I have to move elsewhere. But I don't think I rushed. Really, there was a step after another step. Gradually, now my fiction has begun to be set in the United States. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't go back to China or somewhere, another country. Anything can happen. But the American immigrant experience will be my major theme.
Going forwards.
Yes, going forward.
Would it therefore be fair to say that as a fiction writer, a lot of the writing, the creative output is a function of our assimilation. You know, it's what we take in, and then kind of the churn happens. And there is a phase lag, but you know, that's what therefore comes out.
Sure.
So therefore, probably, in a sense, where you started from and where you are could be seen as having been mirrored in your books thus far?
Sure, you can't separate the dancer from the dance, right?
Yes.
That's normal. Okay. We can't write about everything. We can't do that.
Sure.
We only write about the things that are close to ourselves, to our own hearts. So sure, yes, in a way, you can trace the person's journey with the locality, the change of the locality of the work. There might be some parallel, that's true.
Okay. So in Free Life, just to go back to the novel again, you know, it's set in America and it came out last year in 2007. And it's about a Chinese immigrant's pursuit of the American dream.
Sure.
I'm sure to the average, not just Chinese, but certainly to the average Chinese, you would have probably reached the pinnacle of the American dream. You know, if you've been lauded.
I can't say that.
You wouldn't agree with that?
No, not at all.
Why not?
I don't think, you know, for me, writing English is a lot of suffering as well. You know, Nabokov once said for him to write in English was a private tragedy. I did not understand this until recently. Gradually, I could feel his tragedy, and I think he was right. There was a lot of pain. There was a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of disappointment. And that's why I never encouraged anyone to write in your second language. You don't have to write in your mother tongue, but you should always write in your first language.
So for you, the first language would be?
Mandarin Chinese. Yes.
And do you write in Mandarin Chinese?
Only small pieces. I don't write a novel in Chinese anymore.
Okay. Do you expect to write a novel, a full-length novel in Mandarin someday?
No. You know, it took so much pain and suffering to decide to write English. Once I was on the way, I knew I would never change the course. Life is too short. We can't afford to change back and forth. We just can't do it.
When you say pain and suffering, is it partly the pain of actually teaching yourself a new language and learning to express yourself in it, and because you're a writer, and then with it couple the pain of, you know, actually dredging something out of yourself?
that's part of it, that the sense of being crippled,
yes.
because there's nothing is natural in this language for you anymore. And that's part of it. Also, there was so much uncertainty, and I didn't know whether I could, how far I could go. I might mess up my life easily, so I had to take failure as a constant consideration. Finally, I have to accept this as a fact. At any point, one can fail. That's a basic principle. So I had to take all these things into account.
You know, I find it very interesting mm-hmm. that you mention failure, because mm-hmm. I presume with each artist that mm-hmm. is always mm-hmm. a possibility. It's
sure.
on the horizon.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you have, you know, I believe you are one of the three writers to have won the Pen Faulkner Award twice. Philip Roth, and uh-huh. I forget the other person, and then yourself.
John Wideman.
Yes.
John Wideman, yeah.
So that's a tremendous amount of success. How does that, for instance, when you were writing mm-hmm. your latest novel, Free Life, mm-hmm. did you feel any pressure? How
sure.
did that influence your...
Absolutely. Every time it's harder. You know, every time it's much harder. And it's a common sense. If you are a sprinter, okay, you run 12 second, 100 yard dash. Next time, 11.9, right? And then 11.8. Each time it gets harder. And physically, you are not, you can't be stronger. You can only get older. So it's endless frustration. Every time it's getting harder. But we have to do it. This is the way for me to spend my life. And so really, you can't measure any success, you know, by the prizes. Those are really, doesn't mean anything to what you are doing now. It's only more difficult than before.
But do awards count as a kind of motivation or as a reassurance
no.
that you've no. probably transcended or reached somewhere in your journey?
No. At some point, maybe in the beginning, some awards were very important for me in terms of my, you know, job security and some other things at the time, sure. It really helped me, especially the first two smaller awards really helped me get tenure. After that, a lot of things, I think a writer was aware of the value of your own work, whether with a award or without a award. Mm-hmm. I think we know how much you have accomplished or how much you have failed.
When you finish a book, a manuscript, mm-hmm. typically I guess you work on it for a couple of years mm-hmm. or
yeah.
longer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you finish, what is your ritual? What do you do?
The only moment when I think it's finished, when the book is in your hand, you can say now it's finished.
Published.
Yeah, published the book. Before that, it's still everything is in process of making. Usually, I work very hard after many, many drafts. Usually, 30, more than 30 drafts. 30 drafts.
Okay.
And I send it to my agent and my editor, and then they would give me some feedback. And I will revise it according to their comments, and then I will send this to them again, and they will consider whether they would buy the manuscript. And so after that, then it will go through the editorial process. It takes years just to get it published. So that's why I said not until you have the book, you can't say this is done.
But when you have the book, do you go out for a dinner? Do you open a bottle of wine?
I would.
Do you not want to look at it ever again?
The last one, I'm sick of it. Just sick of it.
Another thing done on the shelf.
Sure.
Okay.
But it also depends on book. For instance, A Free Life, I spent so much time. It took so much after me. I did have the sense of gratitude because I had felt I could collapse at any moment when I was working on it. So finally, the labor was not wasted.
You know, I believe this to be a fact, but I guess you can clarify for me that your books have not been translated, are not available in China, mainland China, I believe.
Only waiting is available, but others are not.
Is there any particular reason for that?
I think they're offensive or maybe uncomfortable mm-hmm. to the authorities, I would say.
Would that make it difficult for you to go back to Beijing for a while? Does it make it difficult?
Make me uncomfortable to go. Like your children were banned, were, you know, banished, and sure. why you go back. So I don't feel comfortable. That's why in recent years I haven't attempted to go back.
In A Free Life, Nan Wu wins a ticket to go to Beijing and come back.
Yes.
Is that wishful thinking on your part for yourself?
Not exactly, but I have to make sure he would go back to China as a person who had lived elsewhere and returned as some kind of stranger in a way. And not my wishful thinking, no.
Okay. As a person of Chinese origin living in the US, and I don't know if you're an American citizen.
I am.
You are.
Yeah.
How do you view, China has been undergoing a lot of changes, the Chinese
sure.
people, the Chinese society, the culture, and that's reflected in its, you know, its growing might as an economy.
Yeah.
How do you see it as a person of Chinese origin residing in the U.S.?
You know, I think China has been developing rapidly. It becomes a richer country, sure, and people's living standard has improved. All these are facts, but at the same time, we should not forget that China is still a poor country because the vast majority are not rich. They haven't benefited a lot from the boom, the economic boom. And a lot of things, in fact, were not as good as before even. For instance, basic medical service. The barefoot doctor system was gone, but we don't have, there's no new one to replace it yet. And also education is a big problem. And also environmental, the environment I think was a major issue. Water pollution, also the landscape. If you fly in the air, you can see there are few places that have uglier landscape. That's very clear. It really makes it heartbreaking to look at the land. It's abused, overused. So how to restore the land, to protect the land. These are more urgent and longer and deeper problems, more serious problems. I think people perhaps haven't made enough effort to really to make China a better place.
You've been listening to a podcast of the South China Morning Post. This podcast was presented by Manpreet Sameshwar, sound mixed by Michael Logan. Music was provided by Mercury Soul and is available at music.podshow.com.